You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am joined by Dane Moore, as I am pretty much every Tuesday, both contributors at zonecoverage.com. If you want to jump off the podcast right away afterwards and list or read some of our content, as well as the content of all the wonderful writers and journalists there at zonecoverage.com, you can also follow both of us on Twitter. I am at C. Molesky. And Dane, what's your Twitter handle?
Just Dane Moore, MBA, DaneMoore. NBA, yeah.
There you go. Follow both of us on Twitter. He's tweeting out some very educational tweets about the Timberwolves, and you'll get a mixed bag from me. But it's good follows either way. We're here to recap the Timberwolves' victory over the Lakers. This one was a really decided game right away. They jumped out of that 13-0 lead right away, and then they had 16-0. The 30-point.
16-0.
That's right. It was 16-0. And then they had the 30-point first quarter. There was really, it didn't feel like too much of a fight from the Lakers at any point. I know they had the 30-point quarter in the second quarter where they tied 30-30 in the second, but really after that first quarter, there just didn't seem to be a ton of fight from the Lakers.
Well, that was actually the 13th straight game that the Wolves have held their opponent in the first quarter to under 25 points, which is, I mean, that's kind of pretty much the line right there. So they've been starting games very strong, particularly on the defensive end, and I think that just kind of, those 13 games are also kind of in line with this Timberwolves surge that's happening right now. They're taking care of business against these crappy teams like the Lonzo Ball-less Lakers. And I'm excited for this next week, some real opponents. I know they played the Blazers and the Nuggets and kind of in the past week or so, but it's going to be fun to see them line up against the Celtics and the Cavs. I'm done with playing Phoenix and the Lakers. It just seems like only bad things can happen there. And a win is not an accomplishment. It's like, okay, they took care of business.
Yeah, and it's really hard to, I guess, kind of measure the growth of how they've progressed over the course of the season if they continue to beat up on these lesser opponents. So I'm with you there. I'm excited for the next week of basketball here and some of the opponents they play. That said, it was really fun to watch them go to work against a bad team and just have guys like Jimmy Butler. He had 28 points. 8 of them came in the fourth quarter. The way they started the game and closed out the game strong, they had the 31-28 quarter in the third, and then they outscored them in the fourth as well. The way they closed out the game, just playing steady basketball throughout the entirety of the game was a nice watch, and it was nice to see the Timberwolves, after a turbulent week, the week following Christmas Day, to take some big leads in some games that they should win, and then keep the stave off the opponent the entire way after they gained that lead. So it's been a nice couple of wins after some topsy turvy basketball following Christmas Day.
Yeah, it's just kind of a quote that stuck out to me from when I was in Milwaukee covering the game and talking to Taj Gibson afterwards, and he basically said after they blew that 20-point lead, he's like, if good teams just step on the opponent's neck when they get up that big and just end the game and don't even keep it as it is, like take advantage of the opponent being down and just kind of ending the game. And you saw that yesterday with the Lakers, but kind of as you're pointing out, there's been this kind of propensity to let teams linger, even when the Wolves do get ahead by a substantial margin. And it was just good to kind of, see that pressure applied throughout the game. It was a wire-to-wire win. I think both the Pacers game and the Lakers game, the Wolves never trailed in. So that's some serious dominance. But those, again, like, it's tough. I don't want to, like, be nitpicky, but that's the Victor Oladipo list. Pacers and no Lonzo Ball on not that good of a Lakers team. So again, it's like, it's good to take care of business. Am I blown away? No, but it's definitely not a bad thing.
counter argument, I would agree with you. I'm not super blown away. These are teams that they definitely should beat, especially a Pacers team without Victor Oladipo. The counter argument that I have, just maybe some positivity to take from those games, is the first one against the Pacers, Miles Turner had a terrible, terrible night, and Miles Turner is a really good player, and so that
That's
was encouraging.
Point, yeah.
The second one is Lakers without Lonzo Ball. Right now, I would argue that Lonzo is probably maybe the third best player on that team, and so to beat up on Lakers without Ball, I think, is a solid mark just because of what they held. They held Kuzma to 6 points, and he had a really good game when they played them on Christmas Day. So I thought that was a solid mark. And the fact that they have Brandon Ingram back, I don't think he's 100% yet, but he didn't really impact the game that much, and I would say he might be the second best player on that roster. And so the fact that both those guys were in the lineup and they still won this pretty easily, I thought was sort of encouraging. Again, those are young guys that we're mentioning that are key factors on a really young team, but still it's something to take away.
That I have a question for you, and this is off the Timberwolves topic, but just was talking to some friends after the game last night, and just about Kyle Kuzma and Brandon Ingram. And Kuzma's obviously been really lauded this year, kind of juxtaposed upon Lonzo Ball, who, as you said, has been struggling a little bit. But which of those two players would you buy stock in for the rest of their careers if you could choose one of Ingram or Kuzma?
I would take Ingram. I think that Kuzma, he has overshot what people thought his ceiling would be, and it's no knock on the player, but I think this is probably about as good as it gets for him. I don't see the raw talent in him to go too much further. Now that said, if this is his ceiling, this is a pretty solid ceiling for somebody you picked up in the 27th pick of the first round. I just think he'll be a solid role player on a team as it continues to build. Brandon Ingram is a guy I see where his ceiling is closer to like a Bradley Beal, where he's a really good outside shooter and a really solid scorer, and he's going to have, I think if he continues to progress his shooting, I think he could be one of those guys that changes a game when he catches lightning, kind of like a Bradley Beal. And people make the comparison to him to Kevin Durant just because of the body size, but I really think his scoring ability is more comparable to Bradley Beal, and he's going to be a real outside threat going forward for the next 5 years of his career. He's just going to keep growing it as far as what he can do from the perimeter.
I'm kind of with you, especially on the Kuzma part. I'm not as sold on Ingram's shooting, but I do think I would take Ingram as well, and I think that's kind of a counter opinion, but I'm going to echo a little bit of what you said with the kind of ceiling of Kuzma. Which is weird to say that I don't think he's going to get much better than he is, but he's a rookie. But I kind of feel that way too. I think this is the type of player that Kyle Kuzma is. I don't like see massive strides coming from that, though. I mean, he's going to get older and mature and kind of polish his game, but I kind of think that this is Kyle Kuzma's game. So if you're talking about investing in a piece that could really become maybe a star, like a superstar, I think Brandon Ingram is that. He has already shown just a great ability to get to the basket and finish with that length. I think that's really impressive. A lot of the rest of his game, though, there's a lot of question marks, I think, surrounding Ingram, too. So he's still one of those, there's some risk but high reward type players. I think this Lakers team's interesting, though. I'm ready for the Timberwolves to be done playing them for a while. I want to see the Wolves against a little bit better of competition.
Yeah, well, and to your point about Kuzma too, just looking at stats, 17.5 points per game, 6.5 rebounds. He strikes me as kind of like a Donovan Mitchell, where he just fell into the perfect situation. But Donovan Mitchell, I think he has a lot more raw talent to grow. Whereas Kuzma, I think he maybe gets a little smarter as a basketball player and his basketball IQ grows. So you see him like shooting 75% from the free throw line. I think he becomes a better free throw shooter. I think maybe he gets to the free throw line more. I think you see something like his turnovers are exceptionally low as he becomes a smarter basketball player. But I think that stat line stays about right there throughout the rest of his career. I think 6 years from now, we look back and he's averaging throughout his career probably like 16.8 points per game and right around that 6 point something rebound mark. And people might be disappointed, but at the same time, he's just a really solid B guy to put next to some really a couple superstars, and he's going to be really good next to those guys, and really good as a supporting cast member. And that's pretty solid if you're grabbing him at 27 in the first round. So I'm not saying he's a disappointment. I'm just saying this is probably about as good as it gets.
We're on the same page here, though. I think this is a counterintuitive opinion right now of Kuzma because people are going to be focused on the fact that it was the 27th overall pick and he's contributing at a very high level right away as a rookie. But let's get back to the Wolves. What do we got next?
One other thing I wanted to take from this game before we head on to other topics. Wiggins, 21 points. He shot 43%, fairly efficient. He's had some pretty terrible shooting nights throughout December, so 43% I'm pretty happy with. Still 1-for-5 from the three-point land. But overall, this looked to be a fairly solid game from Wiggins. He had 9 rebounds in this game, too, so contributing outside of scoring, 2 steals. The positive note is he's averaging 21 points in January as of right now. I really want Wiggins to kind of get out of this slump. And right now, I was talking with Mitch about this yesterday. Right now, it feels like December was kind of a test from Butler to the young guys to see which guys, when he takes over a game, which guys are going to contribute despite Butler taking over a game. And Towns, it felt like, passed the test, and Wiggins didn't. So I feel like January is a really crucial month for Wiggins to kind of come back and prove that that's not the player he is, that December isn't who Wiggins actually is. Because going forward, Butler's going to continue to take over games more often than not, and Towns has shown that he knows how to put up stats and get numbers ahead of time and how to pair with Butler when he does that. And Wiggins has not. So I think January is going to be a really crucial month for him, and I think he started out with a good game against the Lakers. Hopefully that kind of translates into him kind of figuring this out and getting into more of a rhythm.
I think that'll be a theme of our conversation is January being a crucial month, and I'm with you there with Wiggins. His past 14 of his past 15 games, which is December, essentially, he shot under 50% from the field, and obviously that's not the efficiency you're looking for in a fairly high-volume player who's shooting double-digit shots every single game. I've kind of said this to you before, too. I'm a pretty big believer in the volume of his three-point shot being there and leading to more overall effectiveness for him. That's something we have seen in the past. 5 games, he shot 4 more threes in every game. He shot 8 against Denver. I just think that a lot opens up in the offense, just kind of from that volume there. Even if he isn't making them at a awesome 40% clip, the way the defense needs to respect him on the perimeter really is going to open up things, obviously, for Towns and Butler and the other surrounding pieces there. So if he continues to get those threes up along with the rest of the team, again, if we're being nitpicky, there's in that game last night, there's one specific play where Jimmy Butler just passed up a wide open three-pointer with like 10 seconds left on the shot clock and decided to go drive and ended up missing kind of a runner short. There could be more of those that three-point shooting, but really, again, it comes back to the point that anything we're talking about on offense is nitpicky. This team has now for almost half a season has proven to be a top 5 offense in the NBA, and I don't see that going anywhere. It seems like something that's only going to continue to become more and more polished and improve. So I think that offense is we know what it is and probably a little bit better. And really, the story for me has been the defense. Karl-Anthony Towns has been playing phenomenal on both ends. These last few games, which we know has been a point of contention with him for a long time. I think he deserves a lot of praise for kind of realizing that what makes this team go and be this caliber, the 4 seed in the West, is solid defense from him. That's something we saw Wiggins pick up on a little bit earlier in the year, and now Towns he's playing the way in which Tom Thibodeau wants him to play. He's not over pursuing blocks, but he's getting a lot of blocks. He's connecting on those blocks, and I think that's been really impressive to have that that real rim defender, because you know a lot of the other pieces on the defense are not rim defenders, and for Towns to be that, that really could lead this Minnesota Timberwolves defense to sneak up to that middle of the pack of defenses in the NBA, and that's what's going to be crucial for them to be a real elite team.
For sure, and we're going to get to Towns in a little bit here. I have a special New Year's themed segment coming up right after this quick break. It's New Year's. It is officially 2018 for the second day now. So we have a New Year's themed segment coming up. It is going to be our New Year's resolutions for the Timberwolves. It's going to be stuff we want to see from the Timberwolves, stuff we think they can reasonably improve on, stuff that they should be doing in the second half of the season. I have three of them. I don't know. I probably should have asked you, but I don't know how many you have. I didn't give you kind of a set goal of how many you should have. I have three of them. I'm going to throw them out to you, see what you think of them, and then you give me your resolutions for the Timberwolves. My three, just going over real quick, and then I'll let you have some reaction to them. My first one is three-point shooting. Let's get the three-point shooting up. They're averaging, I had it up right here, it is. They're averaging 7.1. Oh, excuse me. They're averaging 23. That was the bench. They're averaging 23 three-point shots per game, and they are in the top 10 of scoring in the NBA per game. They are dead last in three-point average for the top 10 offenses. You have to go all the way to 16, where the Pelicans and the Knicks are tied at 16 for their offensive production, to find another team that is shooting or averaging less three-point attempts per game than the Timberwolves. Let's get that number up. If they want to be one of the top offenses in the league and continue to be a top offense in the league, they're going to have to average more three-point attempts and more three-point makes. And so let's get that number up to, I would say it'd be nice to get up to about 28 at least. The second thing,
I'm totally with you there. I'm totally sorry. I just want to respond to that really quick. I'll let you get the other ones too, but it's really that seems like it's harder said than done.
It doesn't have to be
more threes. It doesn't. It's really a consciousness of where your feet are. And, I mean, I think at the beginning of the season, saw this a lot with Towns and just kind of catching and oftentimes just being so close to the three-point line and shooting it. And it's a consciousness of where your feet are. One player, too, that I think kind of goes overlooked here is Gorgui Dieng, who has just proven to be a great mid-range shooter for the entirety of his career. And I remember one play last night in that Lakers game was, his man went in to help, and he was essentially wide open above the break from three, and he kind of stepped into, like, 17 feet. When he could have just stayed behind the line and got kicked to, I mean, he made that 17-foot mid-range shot because he hits those, you know, 50% of the time, a very good percentage. I just believe that Gorgui has the chops to shoot the three at a respectable level. So there's a couple of those things where it's, instead of moving towards the basket, be willing to continue to be spaced to get more of those three-point volume shots. I think it's possible.
I couldn't agree more. Second one I have here for resolutions, let's get off the track that Towns has been playing poorly. He started out the year really rough, and I think a little bit of what happened to James Harden that year, that he played terrible defense, that was kind of the narrative around James Harden. I think that Towns, his defensive plays have been turned a little bit into kind of the Twitter gif of 2017 around the Timberwolves and some of the defensive lapses that he had. Through the month of December, when Butler was going off, Towns was right there with him. He was averaging 20.2 points per game in December, 11.3 rebounds, 2.1 blocks, 1.6 steals per game. So while Jimmy Butler had an uptick in production on offense and Wiggins took a really steep downturn, Towns was right there with him. He averaged more points, just slightly. He averaged 11.6 rebounds in November, 11.3 in December. So right there, about the same in rebounds, but he had more blocks. He had more steals. He was right there with Butler, and his stats got better both on offense and on defense. And in 38 games, he has had 30 double-doubles. So let's get off the narrative that Towns is having a down year just because of some defensive lapse and some tweets about him early in the season and on some bad defensive plays early on. Towns is having a really good year, and he's gotten better throughout the course of the season, while other players on the Timberwolves roster have gotten worse. And so Butler and Towns are at the top of this team, and Towns is having a really nice year. response to that one?
Yeah, I'm totally with you. And it's kind of what I do during the games is try and cut clips and, you know, post them on Twitter of things I'm noticing, you know, during the game, little snippets of what's happening on the floor. And I think myself, it was when I was looking to do that at the beginning of the year, it's a lot easier to make snippets of negative things. And I think with Towns, you're talking about those gifts, is like, that's something, you know, that's something I was doing and showing those defensive lapses. And it's really, you know, you tweet a gif about something like that and people really latch to that, retweet it, quote tweet it, and rip on it. And so I think, like, just for myself too, is maybe my resolution is to, you know, make sure that that's balanced and showcase that, you know, sure, there's still issues with Karl Towns, but like more broadly, it should be the positive things, because those positives have been there. And let's be fair to him. Like, this wasn't an easy adjustment in having Jimmy Butler come in. That's not only a big personality, but a high usage type player who's ball dominant, has a dominant personality. Like, Karl Towns deserves credit for adapting and also improving over the course of this year, particularly on defense. I think that's been noticeable. So I'm with you. Let's latch on to the things that Towns has done well, because there's been plenty of them.
Well, and to your point too, I'm not asking people to kind of cloak Towns and try and cover up his mistakes. I'm not trying to be a biased reporter. I think if you do mess up, there is a certain degree to which you could be called out for it. I'm just saying he messed up early on. Now let's get behind him and his improvement, you know, and right along with your point, he has improved. Let's get behind his improvement and notice when he's doing really well, as well as when he has had some lapses. So let's get behind the new Towns and what he's doing in this new offense as they've kind of tweaked it and critiqued it throughout the season and made some changes. My third and final resolution, can we get Marcus Georges Hunt's kid in more interviews with Jimmy Butler? He was in an interview last night. Jimmy Butler picked him up during the mid-interview and had him join in. I don't want this to come off as critiquing a child, but when Steph Curry's kids are in an interview, they're dominating the interview. They clearly want to be the center of the interview, and you really miss out on what Curry is saying. Now, I know they're just kids, but Marcus Georges Hunt kid, very professional. He came in, he greeted the media, and then he let Jimmy Butler talk and say what he needed to say to the media. Very professional, really well done, and just an adorable kid. I think we need to have more interviews with Jimmy Butler and the child of Marcus Georges Hunt.
I don't know how to respond to that. Yes, I'm. Yes, yes.
These are all very serious to me.
Little Georges Hunt was, I think, the name I saw John Meyer coin him on Twitter, and he was definitely. I didn't even know Marcus had a kid. So but like, just kind of to that point, I think that was the most positivity that locker room has seen after a game all season. I mean, it kind of started with Tibbs' press conference last night, and he just was one for about 10 minutes just talking about the strides that almost every player on the team is making. And I think that the Wolves are just the things are looking up finally, and there's just, in a town that's had so much negativity, it's good to have this positives and a little more lightheartedness, and, you know, like winning does that. It's a funny thing.
Winning cures it all. I do love too. I just really like Jimmy Butler in general, and have since his early days at Chicago. But I really love how, whether he's talking about a game, whether he's joking around in an interview about Tyus Jones and what he did in the game, or whether he's holding somebody else's kid, basically after the first 30 seconds, his face is the same. Like, oh yeah, this is totally normal. This is a very serious interview, and whatever I'm doing outside of answering your questions, all of this is what's supposed to be happening, and I'm taking it all very seriously. It's really funny, and I really just enjoy his personality and the way he approaches kind of the media and post-game stuff and basketball in general. I have really enjoyed the Jimmy Butler experience so far, and I cannot wait to continue enjoying it throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, he's the best thing that's happened to Timberwolves basketball in a long time. I think at the beginning of the season, while the Wolves were kind of winning, but maybe it wasn't pretty, and there's a little bit of frustration here and there, and understanding whose team it is. And I think with Butler kind of taking that back seat a little bit at the beginning of the season, maybe fans are having a little bit of trouble like latching on to a player to connect to with this team. And that's always been, I mean, for decades now, there's been a Timberwolves player that the fans seem to latch on to. Of course, like going back to Kevin Garnett in the early 2000s, I think
people and that's really connected. That's it. It's just been Kevin Garnett all this time.
No, but I'm talking about, well, maybe for really good, but I do think you saw people really fall in love with Ricky Rubio recently, and that was a person that, I mean, obviously there's some people who like to bash on Ricky for his shooting, but he was largely someone who the fans connected to. And I think Kevin Love was that way also when he was having that couple of dominant seasons. There was something really good to latch onto, and kind of as a product maybe of Towns and Wiggins' personalities, that was kind of a void the past couple seasons. And now with Jimmy, that really does seem that the fans have someone to latch onto, and is the way in which he plays on the court. And then to your point, Colton, the way he is in the media and the way he is with a camera in his face, he's a very good mix of serious and also silly there too. So it's exciting to be ready for the post game videos and interviews to come out afterwards, because you want to know what Jimmy Butler has to say. And he's just kind of done a great job with his brand, I think, in Minnesota.
Oh, he's fantastic. Love it all. We're going to get you to your New Year's resolutions after our second quick break here. Dame Moore, what are your New Year's resolutions for the Timberwolves?
I have two. The first is to embrace creativity, and I think that's mostly directed towards the coach, who I don't mean this to rip on Tom Thibodeau. He's done a great job leading this team to the four seed in the West. They look dominant, but we do know that Tibbs is very rigid in his rotations and has a quick hook with a lot of the players, and that's just kind of his personality. And I think some creativity with trying players at different positions, letting some of the bench players play a little more here and there, trying different units together and getting creative with that could be very informative. I think this season when players have been hurt, we've got the chance to when Bielitsa went out right at the beginning of the year, we saw Gorgui Dieng start playing at power forward alongside Towns, and that was very informative that, you know, this is something that can, you know, work in this group here too. And then when Jeff Teague missed time at the beginning of the year, you were seeing 38 minutes a night from Tyus Jones, and we kind of developed this belief in Tyus Jones being more than just a backup point guard. So rather than injuries forcing the Timberwolves to be creative, I would like to just see some more mixing and matching, trying different things, Bielitsa at the three, just get weird a little bit. That's what the regular season is for, is to try and mess around and find something maybe you didn't know that you had. So I want winning to be the focus, but also be willing to adapt and change, and in the middle of the games, not know exactly what the rotation is going to be. Just get creative.
I think what we've been saying about the three-point shooting, I think feeds right into that, is kind of maybe trying to find some new creative lineups or just some new creative ways to run the offense to open up more three-point shooting. So I think that feeds right into that, and I couldn't agree more. Some creativity would definitely not hurt this offense, especially when they have the record they do, 24-14, and have a pretty firm hold right now on the fourth seed in the West. I think if you're finding some creativity and tweaking some stuff through the regular season, I don't think that's going to cost you enough games to where you have to actually be worried about it. What's your second resolution?
My second resolution is tweak the roster. I think a little tweak could go a long ways in just kind of making this team better and having the pieces come together a little more. There's clearly still deficiencies in wing depth and defense, and if that could be addressed, I don't want to like a full sail change and give up a player who's necessarily crucial to the rotation as it is, but move that Oklahoma City pick, that's going to be a late first round pick, and let's get an impactful player in off the bench who can you know, stabilize the second unit's defense, bring a little bit of scoring, bring a little bit of ball handling to the second unit. I think that would go a long way. I saw Aaron Gleeman tweeted out this morning a stat with the on-court, off-court point differentials per 100 possessions. And Jamal Crawford has definitely been a very helpful piece to this team, but he's only ahead of Shabazz Muhammad in on-court, off-court point differentials, and it's negative 16.3 per 100 possessions. And that's very bad. I don't think that's all on Crawford. That's partially from playing with a weaker second unit often and kind of an over-reliance on Crawford there. But I don't necessarily want Crawford to lose his minutes by any means, but another type of player that could take on some ball handling and bring a little bit more scoring and take over Jamal's biggest weakness, which is defense, I think that would be a boon for this team. And so yeah, I'm going to say make a roster tweak. Get rid of the first round pick, maybe attach Cole Aldrich's contract to it, and let's make a trade.
Real quick, we are headed to the end of the episode here, but real quickly, I think Lou Williams is out of the price range of the Timberwolves. What would you give up for like an Austin Rivers?
Well, Rivers makes $12 million a year. So that's what's kind of tough with this is the financials of it all.
You'd have to figure out some way to dump Aldrich.
Than that, too. You need to get more because I'm pretty sure Rivers is making $12 million a year. So there would need to be Aldrich and kind of another piece, maybe like Shabazz Muhammad if he attaches his
Aldrich would be the main one because that would free up the most space probably off the bench, and then you'd have to attach it with the pick and probably another player.
Yeah, another player. That's what I'm saying, too. So once you get up into that eight figures salary, which is Rivers or someone like that, it requires more money going out. I'm kind of like a Marco Bellinelli or a Tyreke Evans, something like that someone who's making less money. Cole would be the only piece going out in that situation, and then attaching the first round pick that would make sense to me. I think if you have to attach on Shabazz Muhammad, you want to go even further attaching on Gorgui Jang, you're giving away more. Not that Shabazz has been good or anything, but that's another negative asset that you're attaching along with Cole, which is a negative asset at his salary. I just do think it'll be the player they trade for will be cheaper, will be under $10 million. So, but to answer your question, Austin Rivers, that would be a spark plug off the bench. I mean, his contract isn't great. So do you think it would be more than the first round pick and salary cap filler?
Probably. I'm just looking if I don't want to get rid of a guy like Bielitsa or Crawford off the bench, I'm probably having to package together about three different things to grab anybody like Austin Rivers or even a Tyreke Evans. And I think Lou Williams has played too well for the Timberwolves to acquire without packaging way more than they're willing to give up. So if I'm just being uber critical and looking at the stuff they have, that pick is going to be, I imagine, fairly late in the draft. And so you're going to have to attach on a few other pieces off the Timberwolves bench unless they're comfortable giving up a guy like Tyus Jones. Because outside of one of those mainstay kind of bench pieces, I don't see them getting a guy back that you really like outside of the pick and a piece. Like, I think you need three pieces in that trade for the Timberwolves to get anybody.
Yeah, like for that caliber of player, we're talking about adding Justin Patton or Tyus Jones, and it's a lot to give up in Jones, given how good he's been this year and obviously how crucial he is as the backup point guard, particularly given Teague's current injury. But it'd be tough for a lot of people to swallow moving Tyus Jones, but he would be one of those attractive pieces to another, you know, franchise to add. He's just 21 years old and has clearly made strides all three of his seasons. So I think if Tyus or Patton were to be into it, we're talking about a much better type of piece, like the DeAndre Jordan, Tyson Chandler, that something more is more than Cole Aldrich, and the first round pick would be required to attach there. But all this is we're being very speculative, and probably some people listening to this think what we're suggesting is silly or not. But I just to kind of wrap that all back together, I think the most likely thing is trading for a player that, you know, costs between $3 and $8 million, and you trade Cole, that makes the money work, and you attach the first round pick. That's what I would assume will happen.
All very interesting. We're definitely going to do a show closer to the trade deadline with a bunch of the guys. I was thinking about having three or four of you guys on the show, but we're going to do, coming into the future, we're going to do a trade show and really get into this stuff. But it's all interesting to look at, and I think you saw how much movement there was this summer. I think you definitely have some movement at the trade deadline that may surprise some people, but there's going to be pieces moving around at the trade deadline just with the way this season is gone. So it'll be a fun deadline to watch out for. As we head out here, happy birthday to Tim Fakeless, our editor at zonecoverage.com. He handles a bunch of pretty much all the Timberwolves stuff goes through him, and he's running all that stuff. So happy birthday to him, and thanks, Dane, for coming on another Locked On Wolves.
Yeah, dude, thanks. Thanks for having me. Happy birthday, Tim. I hope Marcus George's hunt gives you a high five for your birthday.
The best thing that could happen to a Timberwolves beat reporter. He's Dane Moore. I'm Colt Molesky, and this has been another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network.